Many, you do so many things. I want to know everything. I want to know, but the thing that I'm most excited about was that you started playing flute because of Ian Anderson, who was like, my God. So, okay, so before that though, you were, when did you start singing? How did this all begin for you?
I started singing when I was 5. My parents are from Texas. My family's from Texas, and we sang gospel music from the time I was a baby. So we
Were
were
you a
I was
fam? Were
actually
you like a family?
yes. And excuse me. I started singing. I mean, I recorded my first record when I was 5 years old.
Stop that. You're
Yeah.
kidding me. You
No, I'm
guys,
serious.
what? What
Yeah,
kind of
and.
record did you guys
Well, it
do?
was a little gospel record that we did as a family, and we went up to Nashville and they recorded us, and it was it was a thing that my family did. We did lots of what they call gospel singings in the around the Texas, Louisiana area, that kind of stuff, But most of it is so long ago, and I was so young, I don't remember a lot of it. But we
Was it
traveled.
your whole fit? Was everyone in your family musical?
Yes, and.
Wow.
My brother's a great guitar player. Snuffy can tell you, can testify.
Snuffy told me your brother is an unbelievable
Yeah,
guitar player.
he really, really is. And he led the way for me in a lot of respects in my musical career. But as I got older, getting back to your question, as I got older, I got kind of got away from gospel music and got into, of course, I got into country next. And
Did you play guitar for,
I
did
played
you?
mandolin. I played mandolin, and my brother played guitar, and we played at little, festivals and little school.
How old were you when you started doing that?
This was around 10, 11-ish, fourth, fifth grade kind of thing, So music was part of our DNA.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
So going all
yeah.
the way back, and then from then on, and then my brother got into more rock and roll, of course. When the Beatles hit Ed Sullivan, that was it. That was like the floodgates opened, and everybody I know that was older than me went into rock and roll. And I kind of stayed in country for a while because I didn't really know what to make of the Beatles when I was 10 years old, 11, whatever it was.
Who caught your eye in the Beatles, Warren? Who, like, 'cause I think everybody had a Beatle. Who was your Beatle?
I would think it was probably Paul McCartney. Just because of just the amazing vocal stuff that he was able to do, and play the bass left-handed at the same time. I didn't understand how can anybody play bass left-handed, and then Hendrix came along and he played guitar left-handed, and it's like that was pretty freaky. But at first, I was into country music, and then I gradually, as my friends in high school figured out that I could sing, they needed a singer for their garage band. So I ended up jumping from garage band to garage band in every garage band in Fort Worth, Texas. So I gained a lot of experience doing that, I suppose.
And so, how were your parents when the music went from gospel? I'm guessing from gospel to country was okay. How were they when it went from gospel to garage? Were they okay with you playing garage band stuff?
I don't think that they had a problem with that at all. My dad was a World War II veteran, and he had pretty much seen it all. You know what I'm saying? So long hair and kids, playing music didn't, that was nothing to him. In fact, he took up for us when the schools were kicking us out for having too long a hair and stuff. It really would piss him off, and he would go down there and chew them out. It's like, Dad, take it easy.
Wow.
I was really proud of him for that,
Did your parents get to see you have success?
Yes, they did. My brother had success before I did. He was in let's see, he was in a group called the Yellow Pages, and then he got through some connections that we had with musicians out of the North Texas area, which I know Snuffy knows Dean Parks and a lot of,
Oh, hell yeah.
a lot of the session guys, David Hungate, and we're all friends with my brother before for the existence of Toto and all of this stuff.
Wait, we have to say that you and Snuffy go back, and your
back
brother
as far
go
as
back.
Texas, back that far, you know.
Like 50
And like
years,
I said,
yeah.
we were in a band with Doug for a while.
Snuffy's brother, yeah. Crazy.
So anyway, yeah, my parents did see that my brother actually got recommended for the Sonny and Cher TV show, you know. And
crazy.
He did that a little bit, and he did some touring with them. And then he came
so
back.
So was that the 60s? Was that the late 60s, the Sonny and
I
Cher
think
show?
It was the mid 70s.
Oh, that was already the mid 70s, the Sonny
well,
and
yeah,
Cher show. Okay.
I had gotten a group in a group called Blood Rock, which was a big group.
Yeah, sure.
A deal out of with Capitol. And this was 71-ish, 71, right after I got out of high school. And so we had a deal with Capitol. So I came to L.A. when I was 19 years old. You know?
And you were the lead singer.
Yes. And they were trying to draft me at the same time.
And were you playing... You were playing harmonica. Were you a harmonica?
I was singing. By that time, I was singing. I had taken up harmonica when I was 15. You know, through the influence of people like Paul Butterfield and Mick Jagger, seeing him play, you know, be a lead singer and have something else to do, and Robert Plant and all those guys. I wanted
right.
to play. And Jack Bruce was actually the one. Yeah. When I heard him play Train Time, I went, "That's it," you know. And then I heard Ian Anderson play the flute, and I went, I'm all in with that. So I took up the flute. And then 3 years later, I thought, well, I like saxophone too. And saxophone's in the same family as the flute. It's in the woodwind family. So I took up sax at 20 years old. So this was all happening around the same time that I got the deal with Blood Rock.
Okay, hold on a second. Are you self-taught? Did you take lessons? Did
yeah,
this
by that
come
time
naturally to you?
I was all self-taught.
You were
all
all self-taught.
I didn't even go to college.
Do you read music?
Yeah, but I didn't read music at that time. I learned to read music in college because after Blood Rock was dropped by, I think we did 3 or 4 records, and after that, Capitol dropped us. And then I went back to Texas and was trying to go to school. Was trying to pay my way through college.
What were you going to school for?
I was studying music in school.
Okay.
And
what was your intention?
Well, I didn't really know. I just figured if I had an education, it would, you know, that was the
be a good thing.
That was the operating thesis, I suppose, back then, that if you had a degree that you could go further in life. It turned out not to be the case for me.
Were you part of the whole draft thing? Was that an issue for
I
you?
I nearly got drafted when I was with Blood Rock, and I was able to.
Did you have a number?
I had my number was 69, and it was in the
Ooh.
Lower third. You know, they had a tier system where the people in the first 100 definitely went.
Hell yeah.
In the second, it was 50-50, and the people in the third were probably upper third were probably
right.
To get out, you know. And my oldest brother joined the Navy. My middle brother was in the upper third. Bill was in the upper third, and I was 69. So I was going. So I just starved myself for a couple of weeks. And when I went in for my physical, I was too skinny. And they said, you come back in 6 months. And 6 months later, it was over. Nixon was pulling everybody out.
Out of the draft
I
by
dodged
being
it.
too skinny.
Yeah, well, I was a skinny kid anyway. I was already only 135 pounds, so I had to lose 20 pounds, you know. And
So it was a strategy and it worked.
Yeah, it just, I got lucky, you know. But yeah. I didn't want to go kill anybody anyway, or, you know, or get killed for not something I didn't believe was right anyway. So anyway, it was all legal what I did. I didn't do anything. I didn't leave the country, or everything I did was legal. They just looked at me and went, you're too skinny. Come back, put some weight on, you know. And
wow.
Fortunately for me, it was all over by that time.
Could I have your diet that you used to lose that 20 pounds?
I don't even remember what I did, you know.
Wow. When you're that young, it's a lot easier to do anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went to college, you learned to read music. At that point, you're playing. What are you playing
My
then?
by this time, my brother and I had a group in Fort Worth, and we were called the Ham Brothers,
Right.
and we were kind of local heroes, if you want to call it that, because we played at clubs and people came to see us, and it was a pretty big deal for us, you know. And we tried to
And
get
he'd already had the whole Sonny and Cher
he had had
thing.
success with Sonny and Cher, yeah. And so one night Dean Parks came in to the Hop where we were playing in Fort
The
Worth,
Hop.
and he brought David Gates with him. David Gates
Ah, the bread.
of Bread. And I'm looking at these guys sitting at the back booth, and they're checking us out. And I'm like, "What's going on here?"
Did you
And
guys know Dean Parks?
Bill knew him. Bill, I was always little brother, you know. But anyway, I was in this situation, and the so anyway, David offered us to be on his next tour, you know, both my brother and myself, and that was a great little tour. He bought me my first great saxophone, which I still have to this day. It's a Selmer Mark VI, vintage. Now it's vintage. It's a great horn. And we toured, I guess, for a couple of months. And one of the shows we did out here in Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, Cher came to with her girlfriend. And she was no longer with Sonny. Sonny and Cher had split up, and she was going to start a Vegas revue type of show with actors and dancers, and it was kind of like a circus. It reminded me of a circus. It had everything, you know. It had singers, dancers, female impersonators. You know, they could
Wow.
have got it if they could have fit an L. She had this giant shoe that she brought out on the thing that I did this duet with her. But I mean, I swear, if she could have had an elephant on the stage, we would have had that too. But
What years was this that
this
you
was
was sharing?
late 70s, like 79. So I
So
spent,
she was at the height of her fame.
yeah, she had just put out the Take Me Home record. So she was starting on her own, just as Cher, not Sonny and Cher.
Right.
And we did, I ended up, Bill was with me too, and he did about a year and a half, and then he had to get out of Vegas. And he was married, and he was having, you know, he needed to, you know, it was starting to affect his marriage and everything. And I was still single, so, and I thought, hey, I'm, you know, footloose and fancy free. I'm going to stick around. So I ended up staying with Cher for about 3 years, and I loved it, you know. But you know how it is in rock and roll when you're young and you've got money and you got no accountability to anybody, and you're in Las Vegas.
Vegas is a di My brother was a blackjack dealer all his life in Vegas. D Vegas can be a dangerous place to
Oh,
be.
they don't call it
So,
Sin. They don't call it Sin City for nothing. You know, it's
were you? Did you get into gambling? Did you gamble?
no, I wasn't a gambler, but I did. I dabbled a lot in drugs, and I just wasted a lot of money. What I should have done was, because I moved out to LA about halfway through, about halfway through that period, with that 3 year period where I was Cher, I decided college wasn't going to work out. I was spending, I learned a lot, you know. I learned how to read, and I thought, you know what? I don't want to be a teacher, and I don't want to be a flute player in the orchestra. Probably be great, but that's what they were grooming me for. I didn't want to do that. So I had a friend who had an extra room out in Studio City, invited me to move out there because I had a gig and I could pay, you know, part of the rent. And so
Why were you keeping a place in LA if you were working in, you had enough time off that it made sense to have a place in LA?
I had a house in Texas, but and I held on to that, but I just decided I needed to be where the real action was, you know.
Were you doing sessions yet? Was that a thing?
Not in Texas,
No,
but
I mean in LA.
some, but not yet, because I didn't have that big connection thing, you know. But I figured, you know, I've got a steady gig in Vegas. I might as well be close to where everything is, you know, or close to where, you know. And so that I moved out to California and ended up
And Warren, are you playing like crazy? Because you're playing all of these instruments. Are you practicing all day long? Are you a big
I didn't. I
practicer?
used to not practice. I didn't practice
What?
my horn for years. I didn't. I was just more into being an entertainer because with Cher, it was kind of like a very much of a show kind of a thing. Dancing and
Right.
singing. You know what I mean?
Okay, wait. Now let's talk about this for a minute. You dance. You fill John Travolta's shoes. We'll get to that. Where
I
the
danced with
dancing?
Cher too. I danced with Cher too. We had a whole
I've
routine.
seen the videos. Where did this come from? Did you dance? And I started to ask you before we went on the air. Did you do musicals in high school? Did you have
No, I did not
background?
really. I did the My Fair Lady, but just a small part, you know. I was kind of I again in high school, I was kind of disassociated with the whole, and I didn't hang around with those cool people or the football people or the what this and that and the other. I was kind of removed from all that stuff. So they, I was just kind of on the periphery of that. I should have. I look back now and I see mistakes that I made. Like when I was
I don't
in.
know. The musicians were kind of the cool people.
Yeah, that's true on the one hand, but you had to be out in California to be cool. Once I was out in California, I began to make connections. That's when I began to connect with Jeff and Luke and those guys in Toto because they had a connection to Cher. Cher had a connection to everybody. I mean,
That's, yeah.
I met all these people through her. I met
How
Stephen
did you
Stills.
meet the Toto guys through Cher?
Well, Jeff Porcaro used to play on her TV show. He was the drummer when Dean and David Hungate and David Paich and all those guys were playing on her TV show and records and things of that nature. So they knew my brother and they knew me through him. And so one thing just led to another. You know how this business is all word of mouth, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a smaller town than, and you know what I'm talking about. Hollywood
Yeah.
and is a much smaller, town when it comes to
It's a very
network.
incestuous town. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, I was singing and dancing with Cher, and I wasn't practicing as much as I should. Although now I practice a lot more because I'm more into continuing to learn about jazz and stuff like that. But at the time, I was still kind of like wanting to be an actor, but I blew so much money on the wrong things. Instead, I should have, I always tell my wife, I should have taken acting on my days off when we had, when we weren't in Vegas. At Caesar's Palace, I should have been here working on my acting, but that's
You know better than to shit on yourself, though.
well, yes, I do,
You know
but
everything happens exactly as it's supposed to. You
it
know
does.
that.
And I, the last, the first, after 5 years of sobriety, the miracle really did set in for me, because now I've been with Ringo for 10 years,
Well,
10 years.
boy, are we gonna get to that. Okay, but for right now, you're still in Sin City and you're still drinking and using and you're doing all these things and you're with Cher. And are you having a great time? Are you having fun? Is it wonderful?
I thought I was having a great time, but I was,
And
you know how it's just you think you're having fun, but you're kind of like miserable at the same time, and you don't really know why, but now I know why,
Were you wasting your time? Were you sleeping all day? What were you doing? What
I
was your
was
life
wasting,
like?
I was trying to write songs and get record deals. And I had ambition, but I was just going about it in the wrong way, you don't exactly show people your best side all the time when you're in that, situation. And so I blew some opportunities, but I took advantage of some too. So there was good and bad in all of it, and I guess I wouldn't change anything because
Like what would you consider blowing an opportunity?
I had an audition with Clive Davis one time, but I ended up staying up all night long, and I was just like too wasted to to take advantage of the opportunity and stuff like that. And it was like, come back later when you're like, kind of thing like that. Just that's part of growing up. You make mistakes. And then, but like I say, I did manage to take advantage of some of the opportunities. Like when I left Share, I got in with the group Kansas, and which was a complete departure from Share and the Las Vegas Review to a
Hell
really,
yeah.
really good rock band. And I was very much into that for a couple of years.
Now wait, didn't you? Okay, because I saw the film that your son made, which was is amazing, by the way. We have to talk about that for a minute. So your son Robert Hamm made this incredible film about you that's on YouTube. It's wonderful, and I learned so much about you watching it. I loved it. But so you auditioned to be the lead singer in Kansas, yeah?
I did, and I didn't get it, but they
You
wanted
came damn close, though.
I got very close, and they wanted me in the band anyway as an auxiliary musician and background singer and so on and so forth. So it worked out, and I ended up doing that for a couple of years, and again, I was kind of like stumbling over my own success.
How so?
Well, the drugs and the alcohol still playing a factor in my,
And was that a big thing, like the whole band, like the whole lifestyle of that band, of that the touring band and all of that?
Yeah, some of it was, yeah, and
Now you were already, wait, you met your wife during Cher. How'd you meet your wife?
I met my wife in Las Vegas, and her mom came with another friend, came to the show, and you may know her friend was Paula Salvatore. She ended up being the working at Capitol for many, the st studio manager at Capitol for many years. But anyway, they came to the show, and after the show, I ran into them, and then I was hanging out with my wife at the time, and it didn't amount to much. And then until a year or so later, when I found out that she lived close to where I lived in Studio City, because I ran into her again at the Baked Potato, and oddly enough, I had gone to see Dean, so all of this stuff
Of course.
works together, So we began to date, and then we ended up getting married, and that was in 1982. And it was during the whole time that I was with, I was leaving Cher and going and joining Kansas, because I needed to do something different musically, and Kansas was a great musical experience, But I ended up leaving them,
And
and
they were huge.
they were huge,
Huge. So you went from doing this Vegas thing, which I'm sure the audiences were very interesting in Vegas for Cher. They must have been an eclectic, although you probably played for a lot of celebrities, I'm guessing,
Oh
right?
yeah, I met Jack Nicholson. I met Muhammad Ali. I met all of these. They'd be just sitting around backstage,
Wow.
crazy, So I was real close to the things that I wanted in life, but because of the things that I was dabbling in and doing, it was holding me back from the real success that I wanted,
But then Kansas, you're playing stadiums, I'm guessing,
stadiums and
right?
arenas. Yeah, for sure.
So what is that like, the first time that you play a stadium and do all of that?
Well, it still makes me nervous. We're doing it to this very day. I'm doing it to this very day with Toto
Yes,
and
you.
Journey. I love it. I love playing in front of people and live performance. I just, Kansas was a great musical experience. That's all I can say, And then, but then after I left them, I went with Donna Summer, and I worked with her for on and off for many, many years, but
And so,
Mike
Snuffy played with Donna in the 70s
Snuffy is the
before.
one who recommended me for that gig.
Did he really?
He
That's
did.
nice. That's
He doesn't
excellent.
remember it. But I said, Snuffy, you're the one that recommended me for that gig. So I just took the opportunity and I went down. I found out where they were rehearsing. I think he told me where they were rehearsing, and he wasn't doing it anymore. He wasn't doing that gig anymore, but he told me where to find them, and I just went down there.
Good
But
for
I
you.
needed a gig, and I went down there and I auditioned, and I got the gig, you know.
And so she was huge then in the
She had she
80s.
was having hard she was having
Oh,
that success with Hard for the Money.
right.
That was her
Huge.
big hit at that time. Yeah. So
So that's a whole different. So go from Kansas to Donna Summer. That's a whole different trip right there.
it really
That
was.
disco thing.
My whole musical experience is real eclectic, you know,
Yes.
to borrow your term. And because
Were
it
you
was
singing back?
varied,
Were you singing with her too?
I was singing and playing saxophone and you know, whatever I could do, you know. And because I realized the more stuff I was able to do, it was, you know, the better a chance of success that I would have, you know.
Well, so now I saw you with Ringo. You're playing everything. You're playing percussion, you're playing keyboards, you're playing everything. So will you just kept adding stuff
Yeah,
as
I
you?
mean, like I, you know, that became my calling card. After I left Cher, where I was primarily singing and dancing, I began to add. I already had facility on these instruments, but I wasn't really taking them as seriously as I could have during the Cher period. But after that, I began to get more serious about being an instrumentalist, right? And adding that into my repertoire because, like I said before, the more stuff I could throw at the wall, the more stuff would stick, you know.
So
And
Kansas, you probably had an opportunity to play a lot of.
I played flute and keyboard and saxophone and harmonica and everything I do now, except for percussion, you know.
Did you ever get to meet Ian Anderson?
I did recently.
Did you really?
Recently, a couple of summers ago, I was over in Europe with Toto, and Ian Anderson was one of the, well, Jethro Tull was one of the opening acts, believe it or not, for Toto.
Oh God.
Because I remember Ian when he had all the hair and
Hell
beard, and I
yeah.
went to see Thick as a Brick, and I just thought, man,
Aqualung, I saw Aqualung. Oh God. Yeah.
when I met him, I had to just walk up and say, I said, you influenced, you were the major influence for the reason that I started playing flute. And he turned around and he quipped, well, I thought I was the main reason that most people quit playing the flute. And I just laughed. He was very sweet about it, you know, but I just was like, you know, I was in awe of meeting one of my heroes, you know.
Hell
And
yeah.
yeah.
Wow, that's very cool. Okay, so back to it. So Kansas, so from Kansas you went to Donna Summer, and you did Donna on and off for a long time, didn't
Long
you?
time. Donna would take long breaks to do, you know, to record with Giorgio or Quincy. I think she was recording with Quincy at the time. And it was during one of those long breaks that she took that, pardon me, sorry, still coughing, that I've heard
It's
that
not
Toto,
COVID. Did you ever have COVID, by the way?
I did have COVID. But it wasn't that bad, you know. So couple of years back.
Did you get it when you were on the road?
No, fortunately, it was at Christmas time and I was home, you know. Didn't make for a very good Christmas, but other than that, it was not too bad. But on one of the long breaks that Donna took, I heard that Toto was looking for a singer. So I went down and auditioned for them, and was history repeating itself as far as
Again, you were up for the
Kansas thing. I
leading.
was up for the lead thing. Didn't get it, but they wanted me in the band. So that began my relationship with Luke and Joe and Lenny and all the people that were in the band at the time. You know,
And
some
what year was that when you first?
that was 87, 1987.
Wow, that's lasted a good long
So see,
time.
I was early Cher, early 80s was with Cher. I got married. Then I went right into Kansas. My wife was pregnant when I was in Kansas, and that was 82-ish, late 82, 83. And then 84, 84, 85, I'm with Donna. But I'm also doing a Christian rock band with Carrie Livgren, who was an offshoot from Kansas, you know. That was another story. It never really took off because for a number of legal reasons, it just never got off the ground. But it was kind of like a a band that was an offshoot of Kansas, and we made three really good records, and it's kind of faded into obscurity. But that was called AD, Carrie Livgren AD, and AD stands for Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord. So that was a, again, I was up and down with my drug use and spirituality and everything that I was trying, you know, I was still fighting, trying to fight the good fight, but not realizing that I had a chemical abuse problem, you know.
Now, how is this working being a husband and a dad? You're on the road most of your marriage, yes? I mean, in dog years, you guys have been married. In rock and roll years, you guys have been married like 200 years or
Yeah,
something.
we've been you know, I have to give my wife all the credit. She raised our kids and she stuck with me through thick and thin, and she deserves all the credit for you know, keeping the marriage together. And then when I finally got sober, it's just been great ever since, you know.
Okay, well, we're gonna get to that, but how about now your kids are little. How often were you getting to come home and spend time at home?
Whenever a tour would end, you know,
So
and
how long were the tours usually? How long were you gone?
the tours weren't really that long. They're 6 weeks to 2 months kind of thing, and then you'd have a long period of being at home, you know. So it was just a sort of a double life kind of a thing, you know. It was kind of a split. You being at home and being with your family is completely different than being on the road, you know. So there was that, but I mean, I
So
have to.
when you were home, were you dad? Were you like doing the dad stuff when you were
As much as
home?
I knew how to, you know. And then so I went through the 80s, and I really felt that God was working on me all this time, you know. Because I got you know, Donna Summer was a Christian lady, and then I was with Toto for a while, and then I got a gig with Amy Grant, and was doing, and she was at the
Whole
height of
different thing.
her Christian success, and we did a really long tour with her, and that was one of the best experiences I ever had in my life, you know. But I just, you know, it was still having trouble kicking the bad habits and everything. And so when I got into the early 90s, I decided that I needed to get out of the music business,
Because
because I couldn't be the kind of father and husband that I wanted to be, and I wanted to get away from the things that I thought were bad influences in my life.
like drugs and
But like,
alcohol.
yeah, and but as you know, you find out that wherever you go, there you are, you know.
And
So
there they are. They're
yeah.
still there.
And there it is. So, but I had a couple of 3 years where I tried various odd jobs because I thought, no, nah, I'm not going to do music anymore. It's not good for me. It's not good for my head. So I tried driving. I worked with the handicapped. I drove. I drove delivery trucks. I drove a cab for a while. You know, I tried all this odd stuff that wasn't really me, you know, and had some interesting experiences, but and learned a lot about life, but finally came to the conclusion that I was a musician, that's what I was born to do, and I needed to get back to doing that, you know. And but the problem at that point was there were no gigs, you know, because I had left the music business. But I ended up getting back with Donna Summer for a little while, and then I landed a gig with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons in the late 90s. And that was a really unique experience, different than anything I had done before, because we wore suits on stage and it was.
Was he singing live then? Because I saw him about 8 years ago and he wasn't singing.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing now. I mean, I've got some friends that work with him now, and I still think he's working. I don't really know, but when I was with him, it was still very much everybody singing and playing, and not just singing, but playing instruments. Now, Frankie never played an instrument. He was just singing.
Right.
But that was the late 90s. And I think I did that for 3 or 4 years. It was a really good, fun experience. I really enjoyed
it. Was it?
And I got called by Olivia Newton-John's people during that time.
Now, how did that happen? How does that happen?
Well, her manager used to be with Toto back in the 80s. So that's was Mike. He called me and said, "Man, I would like to get you on this Olivia gig because I think you'd be perfect to we need somebody that looks like you and sings like you who could do the John Travolta bit with Olivia." And I said, "Well, I'm with Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons right now." And he said, "Well, okay, if anything changes, give me a call." And I thought, yeah, okay, there goes that. And about 6 months later, Frankie decided to take a long break, and he wanted to move things around and reform the band or whatever. So I thought, well, I'll just give it a shot. So I called Mark, who was her manager, and he told me that the gig was somebody had that gig at the time, but he would let me know if it changed, and it did change about 6 months later. He called me and said, so anyway, I ended up doing that gig for 15 years.
Oh, okay. So Warren, how does that stuff work? You do double duty a lot. Like you're doing double duty right now, and we'll get to what you're doing now with Toto and Ringo, but like then doing Olivia, and then you kind of in and out of Donna Summer, and you're in and out of Olivia, and you're in and out of Toto, and
yeah.
So you're not signing anything with anybody, right?
No, it was by this time. I kind of had a reputation for being, because even though I had my issues, I was always on time. I would always show up, and I could always do the gig.
But how did you prioritize if they both ended up needing you at the same time? How did you which one did you choose to sub yourself out on? Like, what did you do?
Well, I think during those years, I was more useful to Olivia than I was to Donna, because Donna had just moved on and got other musicians when she needed to.
Olivia, you're front and center doing
well,
this.
Yeah. And so I recognize that this gig I can probably stick with longer, if it works out that way. So
is Olivia doing a lot of show? Is she touring a lot?
A lot, but she also was having some health issues. Mm. She had breast cancer from the early 90s.
Yeah.
And boy, I'll give her a lot of credit. She survived for 30 years with breast cancer. So that's got to be an inspiration for any women that I know. And I know some that are struggling with breast cancer, but there is life still after it. So anyway,
and you would work with her through periods, like, I guess when she would go in remission, she would pick it back up.
She was in remission for a long time, mm-hmm. And then, but there was a couple of periods where she had to take a break, and I worked with Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers, mm-hmm. and back with Donna Summer for a while. Donna would always take me back.
Aww.
She would always take, I love Donna. She would always take me back no matter what, if I needed to work, And so, I did a reunion gig with, 20-year reunion gig with Amy Grant in 2009. And it's right around that time that I got sober too.
Okay. So wait, so let's talk about, so you took the break for 3 years and you didn't, you did regular jobs and stuff.
This is in the mid 90s. Yeah.
And that's in the mid 90s. And during that time, did you try to get sober? Was that part of why you?
I was a periodic.
Mm-hmm.
I was periodic. So I was able to stop for 6 months at a time if I wanted to.
I see.
But I was kidding myself, because I thought, well, I can quit. it's harder for a periodic, I think, because they think that they can stop
They're
it.
under an illusion, yeah.
Yeah, they're under the illusion that they can quit anytime they want to, you know? And that's not really the case, you know? So it was harder for me to come to terms with the fact that I needed to get into a program and get some accountability going and that kind of, and some permanency, you know? It was difficult. But anyway, I should have done it a long time ago, but I'm not going to shoot on myself, as you said.
Good, good, good.
You know, all
So,
things work, they all, everything works out the way it's supposed to work out. That's what I've found, you know.
absolutely. So what did finally get you to come to that realization that you needed to stop?
I just finally, my wife had had enough, and she
Were
wanted
you getting in trouble? Were you did it get in your way? I mean, you said you were responsible. You never missed gigs, you never screwed up your
Yeah.
work. So
Well, so yeah, it was just getting too, you know, stressful for her. So she wanted to have marriage counseling, and I agreed to do that. And during the course of their marriage counseling, the guy looked at me and said, you know, just the way he looked at me, he said, you know, it's you, right? And I was like, well, maybe, you know, I thought this was marriage counseling. I thought it was both of us. I felt like I was ambushed. But then I got to thinking about it, you know, and he began to mention people that he knew in the program, particularly this one musician named Snuffy, you know, and I immediately knew who he was talking about. And I thought, you know what?
Really? Your counselor told you that?
Yeah,
That's funny.
marriage counselor, just freaky, just, you know. So I was at that time, I just said, you know what? I'm tired. I'm tired of being tired and sick and tired and being a disappointment to my wife, and I need to be there for my kids. My kids are in their teens, and I needed to make that final decision, you know. So that's what I did, you know. And it wasn't any like rock bottom situation for me, you know.
Wasn't for me either.
Yeah.
How challenging was it though? Well, because you're a periodic and you went through long periods of being sober, so was it not difficult to give it up? Was it?
I just had to make sure that it wasn't another period, you know, another period of just thinking that I was, you know what I mean? So then I
Yeah.
really got steeped in, I got into the program, I got a sponsor, I took the steps that I hadn't taken before, you know, and made myself accountable. And so
Did you slip after you quit?
not for 50, not, I haven't slipped in 15 years. So, I mean, but I had done enough slipping before that, right? With
Right.
the periodic. So I knew what that was all about. So I figured once I've made the commitment to get in and get a sponsor and be accountable, that's the biggest thing for me, is accountability. Then I could make it, you know? And the first 5 years was, I mean, the first year was easy, you know.
Oh, really?
Once I got beyond the 30-day
Right.
thing and I was clear of that, and then after my first year, I was pretty clear of, you know, the physical part of it, you know. And but since then, it's been 15 years of just, you know, and after 5 years, everything miraculously started happening for me financially. I got the Ringo gig. I still had Olivia, but Olivia was taking longer breaks. I think she had started to have, she had had a recurrence of her cancer a couple of times, and she didn't tell us about it. But when we were dan when I was dancing with her one time, I hurt her accidentally, you know, so I spun her around. And she, you know, she kind of winced, but she never told me that she had, you know, that it was like getting into her bones and stuff, you know, which, yeah, I hate to go there, but I mean, you know, it is insidious. And so anyway, as you know, she passed away a couple of years ago, and I was in Europe with Toto when I found out about it. It was really upsetting to me, but
I'm
because I,
so
she was a
sorry.
great gal, I loved her very much. And you know, I just, you know,
Before we move on from Olivia, so I was asking you before we went on the air if you ever got to, if you ever had Travolta in the audience when you were doing the number with Olivia, and you said yes. So tell us about your interactions with John.
I'm trying to think the first time.
More than once, huh?
Oh yeah, there was a couple of three times he came. There was one time that they were going to do it at over at Paramount at the studio there, and they really prepped him for it, right? Her vocal coach prepped him for several hours before then, and we were there to sing back up and support him and everything. So that worked out fine for him. But there was a couple of times after that we did a thing for Pan, some airline. I can't remember who it was. Big airline, over in Hollywood somewhere. And he was there in the audience, and I motioned for him to come up just as we were starting the you're the one that I want. And he refused to do it. And there was another time in New Jersey, which is his,
His hometown.
yeah, it's his turf. I invited him before the show. I said, come on up if you feel like it. And he didn't, but he came up for the finale where we all sing together on a different song. And John's a very sweet guy and not shy about acting, but I think he's a little reticent. I think he's a little reticent to get out there and just sing, you know. And I don't know why, but you
Was
know.
there a vibe between him and Olivia?
Oh
Was
yeah,
it?
they were long time. I mean, they had that whole Grease thing together, you know. So yeah, anytime that John was around, there was a vibe in the air. It was cool to be around. It really was. A lot of
Yeah.
some of the other cast members came around too from Grease, you know. I can't remember all their names or anything like that, but I know the faces and stuff, you know. But you know, my years with Olivia, I will never forget. You know, it really enjoyed to travel the world with her. Went to Australia with her. Went to England with her, all over the world, and she was just a big part of my life. A very sweet lady.
Oh, I'm sorry for your loss. Lost the whole world. She was amazing. All right, so let's get to current events. So, Toto, Ringo. Okay, so what can what did you go back to first? Did you go back to Toto or start
Well,
with Ringo first? What happened?
I was still with Olivia, and I it was getting the touring was getting further, fewer and further between because of her health issues. So when I got the call from Luke. Luke called me out of the blue because I had reconnected with him about a year ago before and just said, hey man, you know, what are you doing? Let's get together. I haven't seen you in so long. Let's, you know, I wanted to reach out to him and just go have lunch, something like that, you know. And
And
he was
he's
there.
still doing Toto all these
Yeah,
years.
he was still doing Toto the whole time.
And you never wanted to do that again,
Well,
or?
I did, but we weren't traveling in the same circles. Let's put it that way. You know, I had moved on to other things and we just weren't, you know, hanging in the same circles at that time. And my wife actually put the idea in my head. She said, why don't you call Luke and see what he's up to and, you know, reconnect. And this was in one of those periods where I needed to work and didn't have any work at the time. But anyway, I just called him and wanted to go do lunch or something like that just to catch up. And it never really worked out. You know, he was too busy, or we just never connected. And then about 6 months later, a year later, something like that, I was home on a Sunday afternoon cooking in the barbecue outside, watching football with my kids and everything. And I got a call. I got a call from, no, I got a message on Facebook from Luke that said, dude, you need to call me immediately. So I said, okay, I wonder what this is about. I thought it was like he wanted me to work with him at NAMM or something like that because it was that time of year. And so I called him, and he proceeded to tell me that the chair had opened up for somebody that does exactly what I do with Ringo. And I was just flabbergasted when he said Ringo. And he said, just, you know, you got the gig if you want it. I didn't have to audition or anything, you know. I guess my first few shows with them was my audition, and my my rehearsal time with them was my audition, which, you know.
Had you met Ringo?
Never, never. And they flew me up to Canada, up to a place north of Toronto, so a casino up there. And I was just, my stomach was just in knots. I didn't know. I'm getting ready to meet a Beatle, and I have to be on my best. I had to be at my best, you know. And fortunately, the rehearsals went really well. And
how was he when you first met him? Did he put you at ease? What
he did. I reached out to shake his hand, and he came and gave me this big hug. We don't shake hands, we hug around here. But here I am, and it's like Todd Rundgren, Steve Lukather, Richard Page, and Greg Raleigh from Santana and Journey, and all these heavyweights. And I'm like,
right,
oh my God, you know. So I was overwhelmed. I'll just admit it. You know, I was overwhelmed, but I knew I had enough experience. You know, I knew I had enough chutzpah or whatever.
Yeah.
To do it. I could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew I could do this. Plus I'd been sober for 5 years. So.
And I don't know about those guys. I know that now it's a lot of sober guys. I don't know about if it was sober guys then or if that mattered, but.
Well, no, it didn't really matter to Ringo. Ringo had been sober for many, many years. Many years. So, you know, but I just, you know, I felt like I had the goods, and I had the good fortune too, you know, working on my side, you know, because I was trying to do the best. I was really trying to do the best I could. And, so it worked out, you know, and I, like I say, I've been with Ringo for 10 years now, and he's just been the best. It's been the best. He's been the best one of all of the people that I've worked with.
That is so great.
They've all been great, but Ringo's the best. He's
that is so great to hear. And then also, it's become kind of a band. I talked to John Waite. Did the show a couple years ago, and John was saying that when he did the All Stars, it was different because each person would like wait for their turn to do their songs, and it wasn't really a band. It was like each guy would come up front, do their numbers, and but you guys have become, now you're a band.
Has become a band. I just feel so fortunate to have fallen into this thing, you know, and it really is. I mean, we're getting ready to do another run here in another month. I'm going to be out another month with Journey and Toto.
We're going to talk about that too. But okay, so I saw you guys at the Greek, which is, I'm guessing, like sort of like your home base kind of for Ringo, right?
Yeah.
And it was just such an incredible show. And you're just like, you're running all over this. You're up there. You're down there. You're over here. You're over there. You're playing everything. You're singing everything. I mean, it's like you're the Wizard of Oz. You're just amazing. You're doing everything.
I got to stay busy. I can't stop and think about it. You know what I mean? If I think about what's going on in my life, I might just fall over, right? I might just keel over.
It's just unbelievable. You're playing saxophone with Edgar Winter and Frankenstein. I mean, like you're doing everything with everybody on this stage.
He is another one of my heroes. You talk about Ian Anderson for saxophone and vocals and everything else. Edgar Winter's one of my big heroes. So, I mean, I'm still pinching myself on this deal, you know?
Yeah.
I got to stay busy. I got to keep my mind occupied and focus on what I'm doing. And I just feel so blessed. It's just such a blessing to have to have this, you know, especially at this late stage of my life. And, you know, in the, you know, I'm 71 now. So, I mean, I don't know. It's
So
just.
touring must be a very different thing with those guys at this stage of life, and there's a lot of sober guys there. I mean, it must be a different thing than it was back in the day.
Well, you know, I guess it's a little harder now because I'm older. But
Is it harder to leave home now?
yeah, it is much harder to leave home. Much harder to leave home. You can, I mean, you know, the week before I leave, I'm always very kind of depressed but once I'm out on the road and I get into my routine, I realize that, you know, this is what I have to do, you know, for now, you know.
So wait a minute, when you're out there with Ringo and Luke and Edgar and guy, like, do you guys like walk into a restaurant?
Well, Ringo
I
doesn't.
can't, I
Ringo
can't,
doesn't. Ringo doesn't really
I
go.
can't even
Ringo doesn't
imagine.
really go anywhere without,
Yeah.
you know, people around him to. Now we'll go out as the All-Star band. We'll go out and have a steak dinner together. That's what we do. And we generally do it the first week of rehearsals. And it's just kind of like a ritual that we do, you know, to kind of we're
But
getting.
Ringo can't do that because he's
No,
gonna
he's really, and he has a
no.
special diet. He has a special person that cooks for him, and he has a spec because he had some when he was a child. He had some health issues, you know. He was in hospital for a long time when he was a kid, you know. So he eats. I mean, and his energy is just off the charts. The way he eats and the way he takes care of himself. I mean, he's such an inspiration to me. You know, I keep telling myself I'm going to do the same thing as Ringo. I'm going to start doing, and
Like what? Like what does he eat? How does he eat special?
He eats broccoli and baked potato and a lot of juicing. He doesn't eat the same things we eat. You know, I'll never see him eat a steak or anything like that. He's very, very careful about what he eats. He works out all the time, and like I said, his energy is just off the charts. You know, it's amazing, you know.
Okay, so now, and the other side of that, so Toto, so you go, you start working with Ringo, and how
This was
does,
in 2014
right.
is when I got the call. And
Okay.
so it's been 10 years now. And we were into it for 3 or 4 years. And then Luke said, look, we want you to come back with Toto. We got a spot for you. We could, you know, what would it take to get you to come back? You know? And so I went, hey, I'd love to, you know? And I was still doing a few gigs with Olivia at the time, you know. So it was a little bit of a I had to kind of do
Wow, that's hectic.
yeah, I had to do some prioritizing, I would say, you know, for my financials and for my family and what was the best thing for me to do, you know. And fortunately, everybody was understanding about it. Olivia was very gracious about it and everything when I left her to just finally do Ringo and Toto, you know. So that just kind of everything just kind of happened organically, you know. I would say it just materialized, it just kind of unfolded the way it was supposed to.
And
And
so what are the audiences like? Like for Ringo, I felt young in the crowd. You know, like I fit right into that audience. It's people like me for the most part. I mean, some young people there, but for the most part, it's our people, right? And so for Toto, are you finding that there's a whole nother generation that's discovered you guys? I'm imagining.
yes, now especially in Europe, there's a whole young generation of people that come out to see Toto, and they're amazed. They're amazed that these old guys can still get up there and bring it. And we do bring it.
Oh,
Toto
yeah.
brings it, you know, and Ringo too. We bring it, you
Oh,
know.
hell yeah.
And Ringo's crowd is a little older, I would say, just because he comes from that 60s era, you know, where everybody was just knew who the Beatles were, you know what I'm saying? And you know, since then you've had the Michael Jackson era and these all these eras, you know, the
Right.
Beyoncé era and all. It's different now, but with Toto, for some reason, because they kept going back to Europe, they even the young people. Well, it's just a different kind of mentality in Europe than it is in the United States, you know. But we're
Yeah.
starting to reach younger people over here now due to the fact that we've been working opening for Journey. That has exposed Toto to a whole new, in my
Oh, but
opinion.
Journey has been around forever.
Right. But Toto didn't get as much exposure in America as they did in Europe and Japan for many years. There's some a great deal, but not as much as it is now. I think we're getting more exposed by
Interesting.
having the opportunity to open for Journey, you know. So that's been a real good relationship that we've been doing for 3 or 4 years now. I think 3 years running with Journey, you know. It's been a real successful combination.
So you're
And they love
spending a
us.
lot
They
of
love
time
us.
with you're spending a lot of time with Luke.
Lots of time. Luke says, I never leave home without him. And I'm going, boy, do I know it.
Wow, that's hysterical. Okay, so now let's talk about your kids. You have amazing kids.
Thank you.
You
Thank
have
you.
your son, I gotta say, his film is I'm gonna put the link on the liner notes for this show. I was just so impressed with what he did. It's
Yeah,
a
and check out
wonderful
the stuff
film.
that he's done for the military too. It's called Hammer Productions, HAMMR Productions.
Yeah, I wrote it
And some of the
down.
stuff that he's done for the vets, you know, because he's real into the vets. He's got a documentary about interpreters who were left behind in Afghanistan, and he helped facilitate getting a couple of those guys out when they're
Wow.
danger from the Taliban, and they're in San Antonio now. It's a wonderful story.
Wow, that gives
Wonderful
me
story.
goosebumps. That's amazing.
And all
All
during
right.
that time, his first wife was dying of cancer. So, but yeah, she
Oh, I'm
passed
so
away in
sorry.
2020. But he's remarried and he's got two more kids. So he's got four kids
I was
altogether.
just going to ask if you were a grandpa.
Yeah, I'm a grandfather on both sides. My daughter has two boys and they're doing great in school. We just found out they both got all A's and they're on the honor roll. And so I'm a real, real proud grandfather, you know. So my life is just
Okay,
my
so wait, tell everybody about your daughter because she's pretty amazing too.
daughter is her name is Rachel Talbot, and she has 2 million followers on YouTube.
That's just sick.
Yeah, if you could look her up, she's got all of these health and beauty tips and music, and she's just amazing. It's you just have to check her out for yourself, Rachel Talbot.
Oh my goodness gracious. How long has she been? How long did it take her to amass 2 million
I
followers?
think she's been doing it for 10 years or so,
Wow.
but she was at 1 million, I think, 5 years ago, you know, and then it waned for a
Jesus.
while, and then now it's back up to 2 million. So she's done a remarkable job.
Insane. Well, Warren, this has been such a joy to get to know you, and I'm so excited because we've seen Ringo, but we're going to have to come back and see you guys again. I know you're going to be in Vegas in May. Toto Journey, where can we see Toto and Journey?
Well, we just finished 6 weeks with them. We're getting ready to go back out, and it's mostly on the East Coast this year.
Oh
The
God,
next,
we missed the Vegas thing, didn't we? It was in March, I think.
yeah,
Oh.
unfortunately, but we're going the next gig we have is in just outside of Denver, and then we're going to Tulsa and into Kansas, up into Minnesota and Nebraska, Cleveland, but all stuff back east. So. And then I'll be with Ringo in May, and I'll doing a lot of shows in Vegas. So come on out.
Back to Vegas.
Yep.
Back to Vegas. There you go. Well, Warren, thank you so much for doing this. It's been wonderful to spend
It
this
was
time
my
with
pleasure. It's
you.
really nice to meet you and to have this conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I look forward to a little green room in person sometime soon.
All right. I look forward to it. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you, Warren. Take care. Bye-bye.